This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. We start our program today with the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Clarence Page. He's been doing this a long time. He won his Pulitzer in 1989, and he has been writing columns that have sparked the imagination of the American public for well over three decades. And he is with us to talk about the world as we know it today and what an interesting world we are in. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757, and you can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Yesterday, when I talked with Clarence Page, it was moments before the announcement that Rush Hudson Limbaugh III had died. And through the years, Clarence has written about Rush Limbaugh and his impact on American life and politics and the conservative movement. And Clarence Page, he was a man with many flaws, but he was a giant in broadcasting, and he may have influenced the Republican Party more than anybody of his generation.
Hi there, Jim.
Good to see you, or good to hear you, my friend.
It's wonderful to talk to you. It's been way too long. You're right. Rush Limbaugh's impact on American politics cannot be denied. And I would add, as a media worker like yourself, that his impact on media cannot be denied, especially on AM radio. I say radio across the board, but back when Rush first got launched, I remember back in the 80s, people were talking about, is AM radio over? He really set up, as I recall, a pioneering national network satellite base for simultaneous broadcasting across the country that was very important. We're still using it so much today, and it changed the face of AM into a talk radio channel, you could say. And it had a profound impact on national conversation, because the fairness doctrine had just been pretty much overturned or ended. The fairness doctrine, which called for equal time for different political sides on the air, generally speaking. Do you remember that, Jim?
Yes, indeed. And I think the fairness doctrine was a good thing, but it sparked Limbaugh and a legion of imitators who are not as talented as he. Now, he was very talented, but beneath the talent, there wasn't much there as far as education or patriotism, or he didn't vote until he was in his 30s. He didn't serve his country in Vietnam, and yet I remember for years he was closing his commentaries by saying, never, ever trust a draft dodger. And he was a draft dodger himself. You were not. You served during the Vietnam era.
That's right.
And of course, you got a good education, and you were a solid citizen. Limbaugh, in addition to everything else, he was a drug addict, divorced three times, married four times. He, as I said, there wasn't much there to back up the windbag that we heard on the air, as even his competitor Don Imus referred to him as a drug-addled gas bag, but he had an enormous impact on American life, and he was making $85 million a year. So by many standards, he was an American success story.
Yeah, I'm sorting through it now to do an essay about his impact, because there was a model that he helped to establish that certainly proved to be successful for Donald Trump decades later, and that model being, go ahead, I don't care, love me or hate me, either way, don't stop listening to me. And so that helped to polarize not only broadcasting, but also politics in general. Donald Trump is certainly reflected the same thing. What interests me, you know, is that with Donald Trump, if you say anything negative about him, he'll never forget it and will just go out of his way to somehow get back at you. Rush Limbaugh, I think, didn't carry grudges in that fashion. One time that I had a chance to talk to him, it was back in the 90s, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He was as cordial and nice as anybody could be, which is the kind of atmosphere of comity we used to have between different partisans here in Washington back before things started to get nasty in the 90s. And it was something that I think helped him a lot because people did see him. Like I say, love him or hate him, as long as he didn't stop listening to him, that was really what he cared about. And he was widely imitated and never duplicated, which I would say is probably for the better.
The New York Times puts it this way in a long obit that is on the front page. It says his conspiracy theories range from bald-faced lies about Barack Obama's birthplace. The president is yet to prove he's a citizen, Limbaugh said falsely in 2009, to claims that President Obama's 2009 health care bill would empower death panels and euthanize elderly Americans. In the wake of last year's election, he amplified Donald Trump's groundless claims of voter fraud. On President Biden's inauguration day, during one of his final broadcasts, he insisted to listeners that the new administration had not legitimately won it. And in 1995, in the days after the Oklahoma City bombing, President Clinton denounced the promoters of paranoia on talk radio, remarks that were widely seen as aimed at Mr. Limbaugh, who once compared young Chelsea Clinton to a dog, and said Hillary Clinton was responsible for Vince Foster's death, that he had been killed in an apartment that she owned and dragged to Fort Marcy Park. That's the kind of misinformation that he spouted, that people just swallowed it, and because he said it, many believed it.
That's right. And by the way, that entire laundry list that you just read off was repeated at one time or another by Donald Trump. Certainly, his campaign launch was grounded in that a phony theory of Barack Obama's birth certificate. And Obama joked about it at the White House Correspondents' Dinner back in 2011 with Trump right there in front of him. And some folks close to Trump said that was the beginning of Trump's quest for the White House. But actually, Trump was talking seriously about running for president as far back as the late 80s. But he finally saw an opportunity after Barack Obama by coming out as the exact opposite of Barack Obama in almost every way. And it worked for him under the circumstances with playing on Hillary Clinton's negatives at the time. I don't need to tell you about what happened since then. But the question is, what's the world like after Limbaugh? And I think we're going to remember his influence a lot because now the Republican Party is deeply divided between the Trumpists and mainstream Republicans, embodied with the current emerging feud between Trump and Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader. This is all what I would call part of Limbaugh's America and Limbaugh's legacy.
877-217-5757 if you have a comment, insight, maybe even a defense of Rush Limbaugh, who, as I will fully embrace, was extremely talented, one of the most talented people to ever be in broadcasting. One of the ironies is that he and Larry King died 25 days apart, and it's harder to find two more prolific and more giant personalities in the history of radio than Rush Limbaugh and Larry King. And he has over 200 stations that were carrying his show. There will be a search for a replacement. And there is some speculation. I doubt that he would do it. But imagine if Donald Trump courted that job. Think of the megaphone that would give him, Clarence Page.
Yeah, now that he's not on Twitter anymore, it would be quite a megaphone, which I thought was the route that Trump was going to take after his presidency was over, because many people talked about how he really wanted to do a Trump TV network even before he ran for president. And you hear a lot of talk about Trump not really expecting to win, but was laying the groundwork for Trump TV. And it turned out he did win, as I just recounted. And now he certainly in the near term seems to be focused, as far as his public persona, on strengthening his influence in coming elections here in the midterms and beyond. And he still has, as Donald Trump still has, extremely high support among Republicans. It dipped around the time of the January uprising against the Capitol, the assault on the Capitol. But it appears to have stabilized again, almost as high as it was before. And that makes him a factor. And there's going to be a big contest now between those who want to return the Republican Party to the older days of stability and moderation and those who want to go for the populist revolution.
We're going to take some calls for Clarence Page in our remaining segment with him. If you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. Back with the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and a few more minutes with Clarence Page. It's been too long. One of the most astute observers of American life and politics. Writes for the Chicago Tribune. Pulitzer Prize winner. Lives and works in the Beltway in Washington, D.C. And let's go to Lance in Branch, Louisiana. Lance, you are on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I appreciate it. I'm a former Republican. I'm an independent now. I left the party. I voted for Barack Obama. I was involved in the party back in college. I'm from the Lafayette area. I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh back then. And the one thing that he did was to demonize two groups of people, the Democrats. There was not a good Democrat out there, number one. And number two, he demonized journalism by calling it the media. And I, you know, to me, as just looking back through history and now up to January 6th, to me, that's a direct line to January 6th. And in addition to the conspiracy theories, but to demonize a whole political party and to demonize the real journalism is his legacy to me. And it's a sickening legacy.
Thank you, Lance. Clarence, do you have any thoughts? Lance?
Yeah. Lance just said it better than I in my fumbling fashion, there certainly is a line. The difference, when I talk about the breakdown of comity in Washington, I'm talking about just first of all, when I first got here back in 91, I was amazed to see people like Orrin Hatch and Teddy Kennedy, as much as they argued furiously during the day, that they go and play tennis together after work. That's the kind of atmosphere we had. I found by the time George W. Bush came along, and I don't just say he caused all this, but by the time he came along, you had a different kind of atmosphere in which people like Jim Carville and Mary Madeline, if you remember them from the 92 campaign. She was working for the Republicans, Carville working for Clinton. A good Louisiana boy, Jim. The two of them dated. It was really hilarious. They had this great Romeo and Juliet relationship there. Back in during a 92 campaign, but that's not unusual in Washington at all for Republicans and Democrats to date and even marry and have kids. But it's much more unusual now. You don't even dare go out with somebody from the opposing party. That's how much things gotten polarized and demonized. Like you say, it's one thing for me to say that well, I just don't agree with you in your political views, but I respect you as a person. It's another thing to say you're evil. If you don't believe my way, you're evil. But that is becoming more and more common, and that is bad for the country.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Clarence Page. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mr. Page. Do you think there's something of a dichotomy between the serious conservative dialogue of Buckley, McLaughlin, et cetera, and the buffoonery of El Rusco, Hannity, Alex Jones?
All right. He was somewhat scrambled there, but I think he was talking about serious conservatives, the intellectual conservatives, and your former colleague John McLaughlin, I think he mentioned, but you got George Will and Bill Kristol, and then you've got Limbaugh and his ilk, Hannity and others. They are not in the same league with the intellectuals, but they right now have the day. What do you think?
Well, it's true. The dirty little open secret is fully out now that essentially two kinds of Republicans these days. You've got, and we can say two kinds of conservatives, really. You've got the mainstream establishment conservatives who run the think tanks, so Heritage Foundation and others, and are trying to find market type of solutions for education and various other social political problems that we have in the country. And you've got the populace. Like Donald Trump, who rouse the rabble, if you will, but are more representative of blue-collar America and the swing voters in the upper Midwest that gave Donald Trump his victory then and then swung toward Joe Biden this time around. That's a deep divide that's now been complicated by QAnon and other paranoid movements and factions that have sort of become like a religious cult in various ways. You know, he mentioned McLaughlin Group. You know, I was a regular on McLaughlin Group from the late 80s until he passed away a few years ago. And the great thing about McLaughlin Group, as the slogan goes, where friends get together to disagree agreeably, and uh-huh. The important thing was that if you disagree, that's fine, but be agreeable about it. Don't be an idiot. John wanted that kind of atmosphere, like friends who get mm-hmm. together around a sidewalk cafe on a Sunday afternoon, and then argue furiously, but then when they leave, say, see you next week. And that's the kind of thing that is really dividing the party now and become dangerous as you get people who want to come and have revolutions move from their backyards to the Capitol building.
Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, please be brief. You're on with Clarence Page.
Hello?
Yes, Tim. Turn your radio down.
Oh,
please.
Yes. Thank you. I was wondering if either of you remember Brother Dave Gardner.
Yeah, I remember him.
Okay, well, I remember one line from Gus Stevens and from down in South Mississippi about a lie is as good as the truth as long as you get somebody to believe it.
All right. Well, radio was used by Huey Long, the Louisiana populist. It was used by Father Coughlin back in the 30s against President Roosevelt. And of course, radio was then the only game in town. But Limbaugh, he did in many ways save AM radio, which was a dying entity, and now it is dying on the vine again. But most of the stations who carry him were on FM now. But he definitely pumped some life into so-called talk radio. But, Clarence, we have extremely few voices from the left to counter what is heard day after day on station after station, hour after hour, from the right side of the political spectrum.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? This has always been an interesting irony of the business, certainly since Limbaugh came to full bloom. Trying to put on liberal alternatives to the conservative talk radio have not been as successful. But I feel like there's so many other different factors involved here. For one thing, my conservative friends will say, "Well, we don't need a liberal channel. You've got ABC, NBC, CBS. You know that the idea that the media are this big liberal bloc that has been popular in the movement since definitely the Barry Goldwater campaign of 64, and I remember well. I've talked to Pat Buchanan about this and various other folks there was a concerted effort to demonize the media as being too far left, and you had at the 64 Republican convention the conservatives who dominated that year. They would point at the press gallery and chant, stop the media or whatever. Blame the media for all the problems in the world. And that continues today. Donald Trump has taken ample advantage of it, adding his own language, you know, talking about fake news and enemies of the people. That's the kind of language usually used by dictators about the media. I can tell you, even Barack Obama didn't get along with us on some days.
No.
And he made no secret of it, but he didn't go on national TV to point fingers at the media. He would do it behind the scenes. And even, you know, JFK would end newspaper subscriptions to papers that turned against him in one way or another. So there's nothing new about that, but it's definitely a factor in today's politics.
Well, we will continue this conversation with Mark Ballard of The Advocate. But Clarence Page, it's always great to catch up with you, and I hope we can call on you again in another few months, because it'll be fascinating to see in the Republican ranks who wins the battle in this schism of the McConnell part of the party and the Trump part of the party. It's going to be fascinating to see how this shakes out.
Indeed, and thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to it, and please try to stay warm down there.
There you go. Thank you, Clarence Page, and we're back after the news.